Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 98 for December 3rd, 2009. OpenSUSE 11.2. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the new voice-activated sync featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details and to enter to win a free Nano or Zune, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Time for Floss Weekly, the show every week that covers free Libre and open source software. And here he is. He's free. He's Libra. Are you a Libra? No, you're a Sagittarius.
I'm a Sag Scorp rising, so I've got a bunch of whatever all that means, and I don't know what that means. That's just what somebody told me one day. So I just,
you're a Sag Scorp rising. You know, I am a Sagittarius with a Leo sun and a Scorpio moon.
Wow, that sounds really complex. Did you say my name yet, or does everybody just
I didn't say your name. Who is he? He's Randall Schwartz.
That's right. Merlin at stoneedge.com, famous Pearl and small talk guy. I'll do the intro you normally do for me. How's that?
I always think of you as you're kind of a satyr. Do you know what a satyr is?
Yes.
I always think of you as, I don't know why. Do you have hooves?
Oh, I didn't think you meant that way.
You know the satyr, satyrs are the...
It's the male equivalent of an infomaniac.
Well, I wasn't using it that way. No. I didn't mean that. I meant the mythological, bald, bearded, horse-tailed satyr. Oh, my God. Here's the Wikipedia illustration. I mean, okay. This is probably not what I was talking about.
No. Now it's not safe for work, but okay, yes.
It is not safe. We're not even going to go any farther. Wow.
Oh, my. Whoa.
Holy moly.
You guys that aren't watching the video are missing something, but you can just do your own Wikipedia examination of that.
By the way, we do broadcast this show live every Wednesday afternoon, 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific time.
Yep, and in the winter, 21:30 Zulu.
You rock! You did the calculation in your head.
20:30 Zulu in the summer, but 21:30 Zulu in the winter, yes.
21:30, you're right.
I am. By the way, before we get too much more into the show, we're taping this a little ahead, so I don't actually know who won, but I do want to thank everyone who voted for us in the podcast awards. I really do want to thank you all for having done that, and all six of you, I'm sure. But, like I said over the past few weeks, it's just been an honor to have been nominated for this. And of course, if I win, I'll be doing a little happy dance live on camera on the next time we're taping. So thank you all for having voted for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pleasure just to be nominated, says Randall
Indeed.
Schwartz.
Indeed.
And Dick DiBartolo says he's written two speeches, one saying it's an honor just to be nominated, and two saying if he wins, screw being nominated, I'm just glad I won.
He would do that.
Dick.
I'll have him ghostwrite my speech, too.
Yeah, really?
That sounds like fun, yes.
So this, I'm really looking forward to our episode today. I am not on it. You recorded this in advance without me.
Yes, it was off hours. It was the only time I could get Mr. Joe Brockmeyer, also known as Zonker, on the show.
That's fine with me because I'm just glad to get him on. He's been on before. He's the guy at OpenSUSE, right?
And I also want, and I also wanted to contrast last week's show that was really uber geeky. This was a little more direct. This is about a distro. It's about OpenSUSE, who we talked to Joe. Well, I'll use Zonker because that's the name he actually prefers. We talked to Zonker a year ago about the OpenSUSE release back then, but a lot of things have happened since then. There's been, they've actually had their first major conference. We'll be talking about that in the interview. We also had a bunch of other things go on. I think it's good that we got a chance to update with him and kind of offset whatever geekiness we had last week.
Yeah. The point that he made last time is he's not a geek. I mean, he's a geek, but he's not a technical guy. He's not a programmer. He's a tech journalist like me.
Right.
So he can speak English. It's like Jono, who's not with us, unfortunately, this week.
Mm-hmm.
Did Jono recuse himself because he hates SUSE?
Not at all. No. Jono had other things to take care of. So,
I'm just teasing.
I appreciate the times that Jono can come on. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, Jono's actually covering for me. So,
good. All right.
I do appreciate, I'll be on a cruise. And so I can't really be on a cruise and do this interview. So,
where are you going this time?
I'm going to the Caribbean. This is a Geek Cruise, excuse me, Insight Cruise sailing number 50. And I'm taking my mom with me.
Oh, I took my mom. Remember I took my mom with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really a fun thing to do. And is this a Scientific American cruise?
This is Siam 4, I think it is. We're going to Arecibo. I'm going to get to touch the dish again.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Puerto Rico. I just had Puerto Rico. And I just want to say also about taking my mom. She has not flown for 50 years.
What?
She has not been in a plane for 50 years.
Did they have planes 50 years ago?
She flew over to Hawaii in a prop plane, which took 12 hours. She flew back 3 years later in a jet plane. So her very first, it was probably what would be the 707, probably, I guess. Would be the first jet there.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that was the last time she flew was 50 years ago.
You must be very happy. This is exciting.
And she's never been to the East Coast. And we're actually taking a week off afterwards. I'll still be doing the show from there. I've got a condo points I'm using up on a condo in Daytona Beach. So I'm going to be sitting on Daytona Beach for a week doing my work from there. But she's going to get to watch the sun rise over the ocean, which she's never done in her life.
What?
She's never been to the East Coast.
She's only seen it set in the west. I get it.
Exactly. So she's never seen the sunrise over the ocean.
An historic first.
Absolutely. So I'm thrilled to death. It's going to be a lot of fun, you know. And she's actually been staying with me for the last week. She came down to see the Ignite presentations.
I bet she's so proud of you.
So she's proud of me about that. And I, you know, moms can sometimes be a little wearing if they're around for a while, but I actually had a great time with her the entire time she was here. And I actually miss her. She went home yesterday and I'm missing her already.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really looking forward to the next trip. Yes.
She's like,
how much can you take in care of Anna? What's the 3-1-1 rule? Mm-hmm. And I'm having to explain all this stuff to her. It's just incredible. It's been a lot of fun.
I tell you, my mom, every time I talk to her, says, when we go on another cruise, she loves those Insight cruises. She's been on a couple of three, mm-hmm. and she really, really does enjoy those.
And we're trying to get you out on Mac 10. I can't.
I already told Neil. My daughter's graduating from high school at that time. I think I need to be there. I know it's crazy. Call me old fashioned. Call me sentimental.
She might not graduate.
Then I'll be that'll be crazy. In the next week, we should find out if she gets into Brown University. She applied early admission to Brown, so she should find out by December 15th. So any day now.
Well, you'll be missed again because you're always.
When is Mac Mania 10?
It's June-ish. I think that's probably the
June-ish is when she's graduating from high school.
I think we're going on a
congratulatory trip. And of course, I don't get away much anymore. You know how hard it was for me to go on the last trip to China. I had to get replacements.
Yeah, I had to come in there and sit in your chair on one of those days. You were gone.
That's
it was
right.
crazy.
Alex Lindsay filled in. Although I have to say, I have more confidence now because we have Alex around. We have Kiki Sanford. And so between the two of them, I think in the next few months, I should be able to take more time off, I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm.
Not from this show. I have to be here for this.
Right.
So before we get to Zonker, I'm really excited. I love OpenSUSE.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember we had the Boycott Novell guy on. You weren't here for that with Jono. So there's some, there's some stuff to talk about here because Novell owns SUSE.
Mm-hmm.
But I ain't boycotting them. But before we do that, I do want to talk about my friends at Ford and my fantastic, I keep saying my car. It's in all Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury's. It's available in all Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. Many people try Sync the first time. When they rent a Ford car, believe me, don't do this unless you're absolutely sure, you can live without it. Because once you get hooked on Ford Sync, you're going to love it. The whole idea of Ford Sync is you keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel. Sync takes care of the rest, whether it's answering the phone, reading text messages, even turn-by-turn directions. It can learn your routes. And it'll tell you about traffic information on the way to home or work or school. It knows. It'll give you sports scores, weather forecasts. Sync is amazing. I want you to go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Read more about it. And while you're there, you can win a free Nano or Zune. Just a few more days left. Ford is giving away 15 Nanos and 15 Zunes. Your choice. All you have to do is tweet, say something like, oh, I'm so excited, OpenSUSE is going to be on Floss Weekly, and then put the pound Sink My Ride Podcast. That's the hashtag. Pound Sink My Ride Podcast, and you'll be entered to win one of those 15 Nanos or Zunes. That's all you have to do. But if you want to know more and you want to see the details, just go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. I have to warn you, once you rent a car with Sync, once you buy a car with Sync, you're never going to want to try anything else. This thing is amazing. It's exactly what you've always wanted in your car, a car that listens and responds to your voice. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. I think it's time to get Zonker in here. Now, when did you record this interview?
I think last week sometime.
Okay.
I forget the exact date, but he'd really emphasized that he wanted to be really close to the 11.2 release. And in fact, he was actually tired from the 11.2 parties that they were having. That was pretty cool. So, yeah, but I got a chance to grab him on Skype when he just between parties, I think it was.
That's fantastic. and he is on Skype. We have a little bit of a whine in his phone, but we understand that. We did the best we could to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just worth it to get to talk to Zonker. So without further ado, here's Randall Schwartz talking about OpenSUSE with Zonker.
Hey, Zonker. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Randall. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah. You know, you wrote me a few weeks ago, very, very excited about something that's happened recently that's important to you. Would you want to tell us what it is?
Yeah, Fedora was released today.
Fedora! Oh, my God!
No.
We had that show already. You're not that show. You're some other show.
Actually, right. Wrong distribution.
Actually, let me just to fill in a little bit for people who are listening at home. We actually had you on about a year ago to talk about OpenSUSE and the various things related to that. But you wrote me recently because you finally accomplished what you said you were going to accomplish by 6 months from then. A little late. Tell us about 11.2.
So actually, yeah, 11.2 was released last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We were working on that for about 11 months. We didn't know exactly what we knew we were going to try to do a regular release cycle, but we didn't know what that was going to look like. And then we had quite a bit of discussion in the project about when, you know, what the proper release cycle was. It was decided that a 6-month cycle was kind of just not long enough. And by the time everything settled, we kind of came out with an 8-month release cycle, but we settled on the date that we have now because it was basically it fell nicely outside of one of the desktop releases. It didn't fall during the summer holidays and things like that. But after now that 11.2 is out, all of the subsequent OpenSUSE releases will come out on an 8-month cycle instead of a 6-month or irregular cycle like we've had in the past.
So you're aiming for 8 months from now on.
Right. So the next release is scheduled for July 2010.
Now, there's a lot of stuff that goes into a release. Can you kind of describe what that process is behind the scenes for people who don't release Unix distros as their daily living?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically what we have is a lot of teams who work on individual groups of packages. And in fact, that was part of this release cycle was we formalized a little bit more the teams that work on things. You know, we're still working on making OpenSUSE a fully open project. And in the past, a lot of the work was done almost exclusively by Novell, or at least had to go through people who work for Novell.
Mm-hmm.
And this release cycle, we got things set up. So now we have teams that work on things like GNOME or KDE that track those sets of packages and work on them, polish them for our distro, and put them into Factory, which is the testing distro that we do. To make sure everything works together, because obviously just packaging GNOME or KDE or something like that isn't sufficient. It has to work with all of the other components in the distribution and make sure that the installer and everything works, you know, all that works together harmoniously. All the artwork and branding is there. There's a lot of work that goes into a distro on the packaging side, on the artwork side. Translations. I mean, there's just a ton of things that go into putting together an entire distro, the management tools like YAST that we ship. And so there are a number of different teams that coordinate. And as you get closer to a release, are coordinating more and more closely to make sure that all of those components work together when you put them all on a disk and, you know, make an installer and all that.
Wow, I think you didn't have a single period in that sentence. That was all commas. That's really cool. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that go into a release, and as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, I'm overwhelmed by how much work there is. Is this This isn't all volunteers, surely.
No, and don't call me Shirley. couldn't pass that one up. No, it's not all volunteers. I would say probably if you look at the numbers, once we started adding in non-Novell contributors, I think at some points we had about 30% outside contributions, or at least 30% outside contributors.
Uh-huh.
Depends on how you look at things, because a lot of times volunteer contributors obviously are not contributing the same quantity as the people who are employed full time to work on something. Except for a couple, we probably have a few volunteer contributors that work on things like KDE that are doing quite a heavy load. But yeah, most of the work is still being done by Novell employees, but we're working pretty hard to change that.
So that's so the cost model for that, the profit model for that, must be that by having OpenSUSE out there so that people can contribute to it, experiment with it and stuff, then the commercial products then benefit from that. And what are some of the commercial products that derive from OpenSUSE?
Well, so OpenSUSE serves as a foundation for SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, and packages are also used in the mobile and stuff that we're doing right now. Part of the cost benefit to Novell is obviously having a lot of testing and a lot of innovation done in the community version before it moves up into the enterprise version. I don't know that we look at it solely and exclusively from that point. I think we also see it as part of being, you know, a really good community citizen and working with the community of people that were SUSE users before SUSE was purchased by Novell.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's still a large community of people who aren't the enterprise audience that we serve with OpenSUSE that aren't served by the enterprise products.
Mm. Now, a lot of these projects that you mentioned, like GNOME and KDE, and we'll get back to those in a minute, but are not specifically related to SUSE. They're actually projects that make contributions for a number of different Linux releases. What part of the contribution is specifically about SUSE?
So the part of the contribution specifically about SUSE, we're trying really hard with OpenSUSE to not diverge from upstream a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, one contribution that we made, Will Stevenson has worked really hard on the key network manager stuff,
mm-hmm,
to make sure that that works. And the work that he does that makes sure that it works in OpenSUSE also goes upstream.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Unz is a GNOME director, and he's also a Novell employee, and he works on OpenSUSE. He's on our booster team.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that he does, again, is contributed upstream. So essentially what we're really doing in those cases is we're paying people almost to work upstream, and we're just making sure we sponsor their work because it's important to what we're doing, instead of having someone work on things, as has happened in the past, and trying to push it upstream as an afterthought. Hmm. Which is really important.
So their contributions they're making, were they specifically for features that SUSE had in particular, or is it just that you noticed problems that really should have been fixed upstream, and you those people are being paid then to benefit overall?
I don't know. I would characterize it as noticing problems specifically, but the part about, yes, they're being paid to work and fix things upstream as opposed to fixing things exclusively for us. It's kind of considered poor community hygiene to diverge a great deal, mm-hmm, from the upstream project, you know, and say, okay, we're going to tackle this, but we're going to do it in a way that doesn't mesh with what you're doing upstream.
Now, there are things, though, that besides like GNOME and KDE, which are shared amongst many Linux distros, that are specific to SUSE, the packaging manager and stuff. Is that are there things like that are unique?
Sure. I mean, we have some things that do make us unique. For example, Yast, which is not only the package manager, but the full system management utility. That is pretty much exclusive to OpenSUSE, although not by licensing. That's exclusive just because it was developed in-house and so far hasn't seen widespread adoption outside of SUSE Linux. People could pick it up. It's GPL'd. I think, for example, I think Oracle actually uses Yast on top of their version of Linux. So they're essentially using Yast on top of Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
And I understand there's a new web layer for that?
Yeah, we came out with, we have a technology preview of Web Yast for this, which is basically just what it sounds like. It's Yast, but it's to be used over the web. So it's something that administrators can access over the web instead of having to tunnel in or be locally at a machine.
Mm-hmm. Is that a little bit like Webmin then? I mean, I'm trying to find something to compare this to.
Yeah, it's similar to Webmin, although we think it's probably, in the long run, it'll be a little bit more feature complete, and it'll also be much more familiar for people who are used to SUSE systems.
Mm-hmm. So this is to both install and manage packages as well as, say, enable, disable services and add users, things like that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you can do, you know, a wide range of things with Yast, for example, manage Apache or set up mail, set up users, all those good things.
Very cool. And so tell me some of the other new features of 11.2.
So we've got another couple of things we have in 11.2. Some of these things come from upstream. Like, for example, we get to inherit support for EXT4 in this release. We've got ButterFS. You know, those are the things under the hood that come with the 2.6.3.1 kernel.
Now, ButterFS is the new ZFS-like file system, right?
Yeah. We've added social networking support, so we've brought in Chocock and Gwibber in this release. One of the SUSE engineers helped contribute Facebook support to Copete. So if you're a KDE user and you use Copete for IM, you can also make updates to Facebook or use Facebook chat from Copete in this release.
Cool.
There have been improvements in the partitioner for the installer, things like that. If you look at the actual interface on the desktop, you'll see a lot of improvements in both KDE and GNOME in terms of the theme, which it sounds like sort of a minor change, but it actually, in the case of KDE, for example, we actually coordinated with upstream so that they'd be happy with the branding, because one of the complaints that the KDE project has had in the past is that they disagreed with our artwork decisions. So we actually worked hand in hand with them, so we've got kind of a joint theme going on.
Seems a little petty, but for a cosmetic change. But imagine that people get riled up about interesting things.
Well, actually, I wouldn't describe it as petty, because we're really, if you look at KDE and GNOME, the distributions are really their route to market, so to speak, for users, and they don't have a direct path to their users, and they bear the brunt a lot of the times for decisions that distributions make. So somebody will do something in a distribution, and people will blame KDE. When it's actually the downstream, or and the same thing with GNOME. And mm-hmm. that works both ways, of course. I mean, sometimes KDE does something, and people who don't know that KDE isn't OpenSUSE, they come to us and complain, and it's like, you know, that was an upstream decision, but ultimately, we kind of have to work hand in hand. We want to show off their best work, and we know that they need to have a voice in how it's represented.
Cool. Hey, you know, I'm now going to offend probably a third of my audience and say, I don't know a lot about GNOME and KDE. Is that an Emacs versus VI kind of thing, or is there something deeper to it?
I don't know if you're going to offend a third of your audience. You might puzzle them a little bit. So, you know, I think the KDE and project and GNOME projects used to have a fair amount of rivalry going on. I think that's decreased a great deal.
Uh-huh.
We had an interesting summer in that, you know, we had someone come forward and say, look, right now OpenSUSE doesn't have a default desktop, but about 70% of your users use KDE. We think that it's a better usability, and also it acknowledges the size of your KDE community to have a KDE default.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a pretty intense project discussion, but I have to say that for the most part, it was actually conducted in a very sane and rational manner.
Mm.
And people, I think there were some hurt feelings. There were definitely, people were definitely very few people were on the fence about the issue.
But I like the way you put that nicely, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I think we came out, you know, pretty well considering. Mm-hmm. I think if a project had the same debate 6 or 7 years ago, when the GNOME and KDE rivalry was much more pronounced, I think we would have been much worse off. So, I mean, yeah, there's a bit of a rivalry there, but I tend to compare it more to like a sports rivalry, you know, where I'm from St. Louis, so I'm a Cardinals fan by birth, and I live in Florida right now, and almost everyone around me is a Rays fan.
Mm.
But you're still talking baseball. And at the end of the day, the same thing's going on with the desktops. We're all trying to get Linux on people's desktops. There's just some slight disagreement on which one is better for people's desktops.
Now, the difference, for to put it in small words and that I can easily understand this early in the morning, is that both of them are application launchers. They're both able to launch Emacs for me or Firefox or whatever I want to put on my screen. But it's just in like some of the accessories and utilities that they would differ in the look and feel of those.
So I think the KDE and GNOME folks at this point would actually present them as application platforms. These are KDE and GNOME are desktop environments, but they're also desktop or they're development platforms at this point. So you can target the KDE platform, for example, and they've actually gotten it abstracted to the point that they're trying to make KDE multi-platform. So if you write for the KDE platform, you could run, for example, Amarok, their music player, on Linux, on Windows, on Mac. And so it's actually gone a little bit more than just being a window manager or application launcher. And, you know, they're trying to get into the toolkits to actually make it easier for developers to write applications, which is really important for Linux at this stage in its evolution.
So it's providing things like standard libraries to do common tasks and also standard widget sets so I can put stuff up on the screen, that sort of thing?
Exactly.
Okay.
And at a very deep level, they've collaborated to some extent on some of those libraries like Dbus and things like that. So the projects have acknowledged that there's a need for them to work together on some standards that allow applications to work on both. So, for example, I'm running GNOME on my main desktop, but I'm also using the KDE, the Chocok. I think that's how it's pronounced. I've never actually heard it pronounced. Not the best naming. I have to say, while I love open source developers, the naming sometimes leaves a little bit to be desired. But anyway, I'm running that on the GNOME, and I'm running Amarok and testing that this week with no problems at all. So, I mean, it's not like you're locked into a specific set of applications on one or the other.
Very good. Okay. So that's nice then that so you've selected KDE as sort of the default desktop, but you could still pick GNOME if you is this at installation time you pick that, or is it something you can switch later?
You pick it at installation time. You can actually at installation time decide to install more than one. So, for example, on new systems, I often take the DVD and go ahead and install KDE and GNOME. But there's one selector where you actually have to say this will be the default. And what that does is basically decides for you which login manager you're going to use, whether it's KDM or GDM.
Right, because that's going to decide where you type your username and password, and that's going to then go on into your desktop environment and everything else fire it behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Now, so KDE, GNOME, ButterFS, what else is new in 11.2?
So there are improvements to Banshee in this release. There's also an improvement for the live CDs for netbooks. You can DD, you can take and basically copy the live CDs to a USB key, and you can use that to install on netbooks because, of course, most netbooks don't have an optical drive, which has been, you know, pretty important for us. There are also some improvements just generically, in, like I said, in the desktop. I mean, if you look at KDE 4.3, a lot of people have been, who are KDE users, have been kind of skeptical of the KDE 4 series through 4.1 and to some extent through 4.2. With 4.3, it's really pretty much, it's getting very close, if not exactly at parity with KDE 3.5 series. So that means that it's a huge improvement for KDE desktop users who want to use KDE 4.
Nice. So I just want to go back to that USB key thing. So that means I could take this release, a live release, and put it on a USB key. How big would that have to be?
It'd need to be at least 700 megs or so.
Right, because it's like CD image, basically, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and then, so I would copy this onto a USB key, then I'd walk over to my netbook and plug it in and tell it to boot from the USB key, and I would have OpenSUSE running shortly then, right?
Exactly. So you could either choose to run it. There are some instructions. It's a little more detailed. There are actually some instructions to make it a persistent image, meaning you can just use the key itself. Or from there, you can use the live CD to install onto the netbook, which is usually what I do.
Now, with this capability, does that also mean that I, like you said, persistent? That means I could actually just walk around with a USB key and just make that my machine then, right?
Right.
So I could go anywhere I want, just plug my key in and reboot the box and whatever box I happen to be nearby, and it would still work.
That is the theory, yeah.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Now, why didn't that work before?
It just takes a lot of engineering to get to that point.
Oh, okay. And now that's been done. That's really cool. And now, if I am not running Linux yet, which actually is true, but if I'm not running Linux yet, I have run Linux before, though.
I think you've been exposed to Linux in the past at some point.
I've certainly run it, just not as my day-to-day desktop. So is OpenSUSE at the point where I could be comfortable with it if I'm coming from, say, a Windows background? Or is this still like the second tier of things? I should probably start with something like Ubuntu.
I would definitely not say that it's a second tier. It depends entirely on your use and your familiarity with computers in general.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put any Linux distribution in front of certain computer user profiles. I mean, people who are extraordinarily new and the people who only know their way around Windows by rote, they don't understand how things work. It might be a little harder for them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's, we've got a couple personas that we think that OpenSUSE is ideal for, aside from obviously the Linux enthusiasts and experienced power users.
Mm-hmm.
Small business users who are a little bit Linux savvy, we think that OpenSUSE is really good for. It's really a good distribution to run like a small business server or, desktop environment. It's good for environments where you have fairly light needs, so if you're talking about web browsing, mail, media, things like that. If you're, if you make your living using Photoshop and the Adobe suite, then obviously Linux isn't for you. If you make heavy use of multimedia tools, like a lot of my youngest brother wants to get into editing movies and putting stuff up on like YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There are some tools under Linux that do that for you, but frankly, they're not at parity yet with the tools that are on Windows and Mac. But if you have fairly standard use requirements and you don't require special applications and you're not completely afraid of computers, I would say that OpenSUSE is definitely ready for you.
So, I know, again, this is probably a Emacs versus VI question, but it's not necessarily less friendly than the tainted or the touted friendliness of Ubuntu then?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean,
okay.
There are always different things that different distributions focus on. If you go out and you read some of the reviews, Ubuntu and OpenSUSE and Fedora and the different distributions tend to get dinged on different things. Mm. So they'll say, this is more user-friendly in Ubuntu, but this is more user-friendly over here in OpenSUSE and things like that. And I think that there are a number of areas where we all have to improve. But I wouldn't characterize OpenSUSE as less friendly than Ubuntu.
Now, is OpenSUSE mainly desktop-focused, or is this also good for server environments?
It's also good for server environments. The one consideration is that we have an 18-month life cycle to OpenSUSE.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, it is more suited to desktop users at this point because you're basically looking at updating your computer every 18 months, which if you're a computer, if you're a desktop user, you're ready for new applications after 18 months. If you're running a server, you may not want to be updating on that regular of a basis.
Just because it's a pain in the neck to go recompile and refix everything and reconfigure everything and learn where everything is, it's changed, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're basically moving applications. I have a server, for example, that's been in place for 3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, looking at switching hosting providers and upgrading and all that. And the switching between those is not trivial. And it's something that I only do when I really feel that I have to.
Yeah. Now, when we last spoke last year, you said there was going to be a conference coming up possibly in Europe. Did that ever happen?
It did. We had the conference in September. We had about 225 people show up over the 4 days,
mm-hmm.
About 50-50 mix between Novell employees and community members. We had a really good turnout. We had it was very productive. A lot of fun was had. A fair amount of beer was drank.
Mm.
And so, we had the conference, and we're looking at doing it again next September, probably in Nuremberg again, though we're not sure if it's going to be in the same location or we may be looking at a university nearby.
Cool. And so that was to have people mostly just to meet face to face that they'd only seen online, or were there was there just information, or was it actual production? Do you actually like get together and do some coding?
We got together, and I don't know how much coding happened. We had a couple of bug triage sessions. The GNOME guys went off to the office, for example, and I think they were there until like 2 a.m. one mm-hmm. night doing mm-hmm. some going through the GNOME Bugzilla. And so it was mostly, though, to get people there face-to-face, because a lot of contributors had never had an opportunity to meet one another and actually sit down and talk. And so this was really important in actually getting people together.
And I understand you've also been encouraging release parties for this new release. Has that taken off?
Yeah, we've had release parties in pretty much every continent, I think, except Antarctica. Still, you know, waiting to see if the penguins throw anything together, but
you would think the penguins would want to run Linux.
You would think, but you know, their download speeds are terrible apparently.
Yes.
So yeah, we've had release parties in pretty much every country or every major country where we're represented. We're still encouraging people to do that. Right now we're producing the media, so it takes obviously more than a day or two to get the media together, so we're still getting that together for the OpenSUSE ambassadors. So that they can go out and either do release parties or go to groups and present on Linux and things like that. The one thing I wanted to mention, too, about the conference is we actually managed to have a few folks there working together on RPM so that we could get a little bit closer to where Fedora is on RPM. So we actually, and we're moving that forward as well, we're trying to establish areas of similarity between Fedora and OpenSUSE and other distros that use RPM so that there's not so much difference between the distros and the packaging guidelines.
Yeah, because that would be, I know it's complex if you're releasing open source software to have to think about all the different ways that people want to use their packaging tools for this, like how do you indicate dependencies, how do you indicate build instructions, things like that. And so the closer that is, the better that's going to be for everybody.
Yeah, and I have to, at that point, put in a plug for the OpenSUSE build service.
Please.
Which is a... Okay.
Please do that.
Which is a hosted service where people can build packages for any major Linux distro. So that includes not only OpenSUSE, but also Fedora, Debian, Ubuntu, Mandriva, CentOS, and Red Hat Enterprise Linux, in addition to OpenSUSE and SUSE Linux Enterprise.
So you just mentioned ambassadors. Is that a new program? And what does that entail?
So we started that earlier this year. It is, I guess, somewhat of a new program. It's basically getting a group of people who have the tools to go out and promote OpenSUSE, because obviously we want to enable the community to do this as much as possible, and Novell can only have people in so many places at once. And we've had a lot of demand for kind of a formalized program for people to go out and promote OpenSUSE and have the tools and the easier way for them to get the materials they need and that sort of thing. So this is basically the ambassador program is for people who want to go out and promote OpenSUSE in their region. And they can do that in a number of ways. You know, you can go to a show like Scale, work at the table and hand out stuff. You can go to your LUG and you can present on OpenSUSE. You can go to your Chamber of Commerce and present on OpenSUSE to people who've never heard of Linux or don't know very much about it. You can work to get it into schools, or you could, you know, spend time if you're not near a large population. If you have good online access, you can work as an ambassador by blogging, writing about it, getting on the forums, and supporting new people.
Now, how does someone find out more about this program? I presume that's somewhere on the OpenSUSE website.
Yep, it's just basically the OpenSUSE, URL/ambassador.
Now, do you, do you provide media if someone wants it? Can I just get a copy of OpenSUSE through the mail and as a hard media?
We provide it to ambassadors. We don't have a program where we send it to individuals. So
okay.
If you're looking to get 100 copies to go to an event or your school, we'll provide that. If you're looking for a single copy, we don't have the system right now in place to ship, you know, individual copies to all the folks who might want them.
Okay, that makes sense. What else is new in 11.2? Do we cover everything on that yet?
I think we got the highlights. There was one other thing. Let me think for just a moment. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Let me look through my notes. I did want to mention, too, of course, all of the applications that are updated in this, like Firefox and OpenOffice 3.1, because those are obviously fairly important to a number of users.
Yeah. And while you're looking through your notes, I'll ask you one more question. At the end of the show we did a year ago with you, Leo and I trailed off by saying, oh, we should have asked about the license change.
Okay.
What was the license change and why?
So, yeah, the license change essentially last with the 11.1 release. Before that, OpenSUSE had the standard Novell EULA, which was just completely out of character for an open source project. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we sat down with the lawyers and we talked. And after going through several iterations and trying to reconfigure the EULA into something that looked like an open source friendly license, we actually adopted the same policy essentially as Fedora, which is the collective work is under GPL v2. Mm-hmm. So the entire work is licensed under GPL v2. That doesn't override any of the licenses that are, you know, shipped of the software that's shipped with OpenSUSE, mm-hmm. but it means that people, and we've taken out things that cannot be redistributed easily. So that means that if you get a copy of OpenSUSE 11.0, technically the EULA is kind of restrictive on what you can do with it and how you can distribute it, which is completely out of character for a Linux distro. Mm-hmm. With 11.1, 11.2, you can take that, you can, you know, you can make changes to it as long as you follow our trademark guidelines. You can, you know, hand it on to your friends. You can put it up somewhere as long as you're following the main guidelines of the open source licenses. You're okay.
And because the collection's under GPL, as long as you follow the overall rules of GPL v2 as well, right?
Right. So in other words, you don't have to be, you know, you're not in violation of the license if you pass on OpenSUSE at this point.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that is a pretty essential thing to have a open distribution, to actually have a license that you can distribute it with.
Exactly.
Yeah. So did you find some other things you want to talk about 11.2 with?
No, that was the main thing. I just wanted to mention all of the application updates. So, you know, people who are getting OpenSUSE are, of course, getting the latest and greatest software there as well.
So moving forward, you said another release in about 8 months. What's any direction for that yet? Do you know kind of what you're aiming at?
That's something we're discussing right now. There is a project that I'm pretty sure will be coming together and be pretty strong for 11.3, and that's Goblin, which is basically Moblin for OpenSUSE. And so that's going to be an important part of 11.3. This release is better for netbooks, but Goblin actually has the Moblin interface and will be really interesting. And we'll probably see an interim release of Goblin before 11.3, but that's going to be a focus for the next release. For other issues, we're kind of huddling as a project and deciding where we want to go with the next release, and specifically, again, with that release, what groups we want to target.
Cool. And I'm sure you're always looking for more volunteers, more people to help with all this, but any particular kind of people that you'd like for volunteers that you aren't getting enough of yet?
Basically anybody. I mean, we're looking for people who can write, who can code, who can do packaging, who can do translations. The odds are, if you're interested enough in computers and OpenSUSE to want to contribute, you probably have some skills we can use.
Very good. Very good. Any last words before we wrap it up?
Just want to encourage people to check it out. Obviously, you know, it's a Linux distribution, so it's free to try. So just go to www.opensuse.org and look for the download links. Mm-hmm. And, you know, grab a live CD or grab the install CD or DVD and give it a shot.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Zonker. Thank you for coming on the show again and updating us on the works of OpenSUSE. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Zonker Brockmeyer?
No, it's Joe Brockmeyer.
Joe Brockmeyer. You wouldn't call him Zonker Brockmeyer, I guess.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun to talk to, like we said coming into the opening here. I just want to point out a few things, just to reemphasize again. I really like the fact that now going to an 8-month regular release cycle, so that's great. It's going to be out on a regular basis.
That's taking a page from the SUSE playbook, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's funny that it's not like 6 months to line up with Ubuntu. So there's going to be like these odd even cycles when there's going to be a SUSE release, then an Ubuntu release, then another SUSE release, and then they're going to line up again in maybe 2014 or something. I don't know. Anyway, one of those weird math things.
Write a Perl script. You can figure it out.
Too much brain stuff, right? Actually, well, past 2012, we won't have to care anyway because the universe is ending. But anyway, the other thing I also wanted to emphasize is that he did once again talk about that build service. So if you have an application that you want to run on every major Linux distro, you can upload that to the OpenSUSE build service, and it will be published in all the different formats, compiled with the libraries that are appropriate for Ubuntu, for OpenSUSE, for Debian, and so on. So it's really great that they have that service being provided, essentially paid for by Novell, of course. That's really cool. And also, the last thing I wanted to emphasize, and we brought this up towards the end of the conversation, is that there's this ambassador program. So if you want to be someone, say, that goes to conferences to represent OpenSUSE or get more people involved in open source, you can join their ambassador program, and they'll send you like bulk quantities of OpenSUSE disks that you can take with you to the conference or take with you to the user group or whatever. So really appreciate that he was able to elucidate those programs.
That's fantastic. Did you get to talk with him at all about Chrome OS? I guess it hadn't come out when you talked to him.
No, I actually didn't bring that up, mostly because I haven't done a lot of research on it, so I wouldn't know to be talking to him about it.
I think you know, as I watch this, it may turn out, you know, we all have wanted Linux on the desktop. This is really what everybody's hoping for. And it may turn out, I mean, SUSE is trying to do it, Ubuntu, you know, big time trying to do it. Mm-hmm. It may turn out that the Google does it with his Chrome OS. You know, come this fall, they're going to be putting it on netbooks. You'll be able to buy a netbook with Chrome OS on it. I built a little USB drive, and I could boot into Chrome OS.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm playing with it. And, of course, you can get a virtual image of it. What do you think? I mean, it is Linux under the hood.
Well, you know, it'd be great to ask this question of Chris DeBona in a couple weeks.
We will do that. Chris is going to be on next week, right?
No, it's 2 weeks. Two weeks?
Okay.
Yes, 2 weeks.
For our 100th episode. That's right.
Yeah, as
listening to this
recorded, it's 2 weeks. For those of you listening live, it's next week. Sorry for the confusion, but we'll figure it out.
Number 100. Episode 100.
Episode 100, yeah. Okay. So we'll ask Chris that question because that's Chris would know about the Chrome OS given the open source relationship he has with Google. We'll definitely be talking to him about that and all the other things, of course, open source that have happened, especially things in the last few years. It's just gone crazy in the open source world in the last few years, and Chris has been right there in a real pointed spot to do that. Next week's guest actually is the unknown guest. John O'Bacon promises me that it'll be a really wonderful guest, and he's interviewing him on his own because you're interviewing him, I'll be actually on a cruise.
Do you think Mark Shuttleworth, you think?
No, he Come better on. Not get Mark Shuttleworth.
Come on, Jono.
I'm gone.
Get him. It'll make Randall crazy.
No, because I'll be on a ship going, no, you cannot.
Not Shuttleworth. Who would, besides Shuttleworth, who would be another guest that would just really piss you off?
Oh.
Not Stallman. You wouldn't mind missing RMS. Eric Raymond?
You know, if he interviewed Stallman or Raymond while I was gone, that wouldn't necessarily piss me off. Theo. Theo about OpenBSD, because I've been trying to get him for months and I haven't been able to reach in.
But, I don't think I think Jono's got the in to the Ubuntu crowd. I think if anybody, it's going to be Shuttleworth.
Oh, God, don't say that. I'm canceling my cruise. Mom, sorry. I can't go on the cruise now. I've got an interview to do.
We'll find out. You can Skype in from the cruise.
With a 1.6 millisecond or 1600 millisecond delay. I don't think it's going to work, and the bandwidth is really tiny. People now that are on the ships that all
everybody wants to use it. Yeah,
I know. There's a lot more geeky people on these cruises. A lot more younger people that are all like checking Facebook all the time now.
Wednesday, you might be in port. You might be in St. Thomas. You go to an internet cafe. Just keep that in mind. You might be able to.
I was just going to look up the schedule, but anyway, no, because usually I'm really busy when I'm in port, sitting at drinking at the bar.
I got a date with a parrot. Don't bother me.
It's usually I'm Wi-Fiing somewhere, and I think actually Wednesday's a C day, so I think it's going to work very well. But but yeah, that'll be great. You can also look at our other company guests always by going to twit.tv/floss and. All of our upcoming guests are listed there. We've got some really great people lined up, coming up on the short list, some really, really cool, talented people, but the list isn't in front of me, so it's just stalling. But and you can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin. That's M-E-R-L-Y-N. I love being able to chat with y'all and crowdsourcing a lot of questions and queries. I've gotten a lot of really quick answers to things. I really like the fact that I've got over 5,000 people now. So it's a privilege, actually.
Isn't that great?
It's darn fine.
It's nice to have an audience, and that's a lot of people.
It is.
I want to just say... No.
But I'm still only like 17,000 down. I'm like the 17,000th most followed person.
Oh, I know. Once Ashton Kutcher and his crowd took over, I have 150,000 followers, and I'm still in the top. I'm not in the top 500.
You know, Oprah should just give away. When she stops being on the air, she should just give away her followers, like, you know, 1,000 a piece to all of us.
You know, what gets me is Oprah rarely tweets.
Yeah, what's the
point? It's easy to follow somebody who doesn't say anything because then they don't annoy you.
Yep.
Oprah's last tweet was days ago. I mean, she just, you know, she says something every week or so.
Yeah, big day. That's probably some promotion she did a month ago, right?
She says, big day, tune in my tweet friends, Sarah Palin and I. See, it's basically, this is promotional material for her show.
Yes, whereas I talk about important things like what karaoke song I'm about to do next.
I like this. This is the top right now as we record this of your Twitter stream is, warning, listening to Merlin talking about Git is extremely persuasive.
It is. That's a retweet, you notice, with a new retweet feature.
It is. That's a new retweet, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, in fact, somebody, people have been tweeting recently about Git, and so they've actually been pointing at my Git talk that I did for Google,
is that what they're talking about? This is the old Git talk. Oh.
Exactly, and so people have been talking about the fact that I made a persuasive argument for Git, and that was a year and a half ago, and I wasn't even as good at it as I am now, so this is even better. So I am going to be doing a talk sometime soon when I can arrange the time to go down and actually talk about Seaside on Google Talk Time, so that'll be really nice.
Well, Randall, I hope you enjoy your career. Have a wonderful time on the boat. I'm jealous, of course, but...
You know, 50 cruises, I'm now in the gray-haired club. I don't have gray hair, but I'm now 300 days or more at sea, which means I attend this special dinner for the 300-day people. And there's like, you know, 20 of us that aren't dead yet.
They're all 90.
And I'm the only one with my natural hair color. Hey, it's really cool.
It's Merlin. It's me. Hey, Merlin.
It's all good, man. It's
all good. You're great.
Yep, I'm really looking forward to this, too. The warm air, the warm weather, it can't be bad when it's been so cold up in Portland, Oregon. So I'll be happy to be down there. It'll be great. Right.
Merlin, great to see you. Great to talk to you. Thank you for the wonderful show. Mm-hmm. And, folks, come back next week when Mark Shuttleworth joins us. No, I'm just kidding. We don't know. We don't know. Jono's going to have a mystery guest. On Floss Weekly. We'll see you next time.